This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me Tan Cheng Han and Joyce Goh, and this is The Morning Run. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with interviews and news and analysis. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Of course, Joyce, you and Han, you don't have to tweet or WhatsApp to be part of this conversation.
That's right.
Well, I mean, unless if you want us to multitask during this talk set and tweet while talking to you, then sure, yeah. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, I guess it is. But we don't encourage it. Okay, this is the first day of Ramadan. So I believe those who adhere to the fasting rules will probably have started their fast by now. It's something around 5:40 for us who are uninitiated into this
before the sun rises. So selamat berpuasa to all of you out there who are puasaing.
Yeah, last night I was at the rally Anwar Ibrahim. He did spend, in that 30-minute speech that he gave, he did devote a bit of time to the to a discussion of Ramadan. He, of course, and his family will have a happy Ramadan because of his release yesterday. Somewhat unhappy will be the family of Najib Razak and his wife, Rosma Manso. They had their home raided or searched last night by police.
I know when I woke up this morning to get to work and you see the updated news, and basically what we have right now is Najib's lawyer, Harpal Singh, saying that, you know, he told reporters that police seized about 3 to 4 boxes of handbags and personal belongings, and he also believes that the former PM is being investigated for money laundering. That's what Malaysia Kini reported.
Right, and also according to other media reports, this search is reportedly centered around the 1MDB corruption scandal. You know, so this is according to reports by the AP and other
Okay, but the political news is something that I think is going to be dominating headlines for some time to come. It's only been a week.
It's only been a week, since the polls. It feels like the amount of things that have been coming out, it's like it feels a lot longer than that. And you know the pace of it. I don't remember Malaysia, and it was like boom, boom, boom. So many things are going on.
Yeah, it's like every other hour you're getting some breaking news. And it's not small little ones, it's like big ones, right? Like zero-rated GST, etc. And we'll get to that later on in the show. But going back to this, going back to the fact that it's Ramadan now, right? You know, it's supposed to be a time of moderation and, you know, tempering your,
appetites.
Yeah, appetites, yeah, you know, both literal and figurative, right? You know, but at the same time, you've got this massive flow of news, right? And which could rile some people up, right? So how do you balance out those two, goals, if you know, I'll put it that way?
Well, you know, I'm no religious scholar, but and referring back to what Anwar Ibrahim said yesterday, he says that, you know, the message of holding back and, you know, being disciplined in terms of your body and such is a universal message. So actually, he began that part of his speech by saying, you know, asking permission of the non-Muslims in the audience, you know, because there were thousands, literally about
looking at the maybe photos, 20,000 people there.
Yeah, he said, bear with me, I just want to speak to the question of Ramadan. And his tone was extraordinary because, you know, in the kind of Malaysian context, you need to be inclusive. And to be inclusive in this country means to constantly make reference to the diversity that's out there.
Mm. Right, but also, you know, Ramadan can be seen as a time for non-Muslims to also participate as well, because I've tried it, and I'm not going to lie, it is insanely tough. I don't know how Muslims do it. I did it for a couple of days. I had to call it quits. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, so. Anwar joked about Tien Chua, the former Batu MP. He says, you know, he would fast, and he says that Lim Guan Eng, you know, would skip meals if he had an engagement of a buka puasa. And he says, well, you know, there were criticism that he wasn't doing it in the Muslim way. He says, and he pushed back on that and said, you know, that's not important. What was important, Guan Eng wanted to do this in an act of solidarity. Mm-hmm. And he said he had invited Guan Eng to buka puasa with him in a mosque because he thinks that's the most important. The message is more important in the spirit of it, not the
technicalities.
Technicalities. That's right. Okay, we'll be back with a look at Cowboys. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Parliament with a Flashlight. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. As we were talking earlier, there's a lot of political news, including voices from the former government or members of the former government, some of whom have lost their positions as members of parliament, others who have retained their positions. Nevertheless, criticisms from that side of the aisle coming, you know, quite vigorously, those casting aspersions on the current administration of Tun Dr. Mahathir.
Yeah, so we have former Minister Dato' Abdul Rahman Dahlan. He's calling for the current government to form the cabinet as soon as possible. And he's warning of, he warns of inverted commas, cowboy cabinet appointments. He's saying that that will tarnish the nation's integrity. I wonder what he means by that.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, as opposed to having this organized way or methodical way, it's more like, you know, just shoot from the hip kind of cowboy style, right? And look, the language that's come out post GE14, be it cowboys or frogs, right? It's certainly very colorful and lends itself to a more dynamic political landscape, if I may say so.
But I do think that, you know, the problem with Rahman Dahlan is it's completely discredited. And this is the problem with... Yeah. A lot of those people from that side of the aisle is that, you know, they, you know, were silent in the face of massive fraud being allegedly committed by their leader. And so when they turn around now and talk about integrity and, you know, the need for, you know, calming markets, it unfortunately for them, they're the wrong vehicle for that message, it seems to me.
I know, Shah, when he says that appointments that will tarnish the nation's integrity, I mean, Malaysia was put on... we were under the microscope when it came to, not in good light, when it came to 1MDB, when it unraveled, you know, in 2015, 2016, up to, today now we're slowly learning what's coming up. But then, yeah, when the statements that are coming up from these ministers, former ministers, this is just perplexing.
All right, sure. So, you know, and I agree with you guys. So there is this credibility deficit right now, right? But then at the same time, they are now tasked with trying to become this formidable opposition, right? So how do they overcome these gaps and become the...
Rahman Dahlan still in opposition? Because I don't think he was voted in,
right? No, he didn't.
Right?
He lost his seat in Sepanga.
Okay.
But even if outside of parliament, he can still be a voice.
Yeah, true.
I do think there's a curious interest on the part of people about the opposition. There's concerns that, you know, that Pakatan Harapan has a very dominant position and that we might return to the bad old days of the Barisan Nasional. But curiously enough, people are staking their hopes on the former Barisan Nasional that did, in fact, dominate everything and did suppress, you know, freedom of speech. So I'm not quite sure if they've got their targets a bit wrong. I mean, they can look to PAS. PAS could be that other side of the, in terms of opposition or a counterpoint to what's happening on the Pakatan Harapan side.
Well, I mean, well, there has been commentary coming out of Barisan Nasional, right, about trying to relook at the makeup of UMNO, for example, or even the alliance within BN as well. Right? The idea is that now they have the opportunity now, whether or not they actually successfully reform themselves, as a whole different side of the story. Execution risk aside, they at least have the opportunity now to reinvent themselves and become this opposition, at least one that's worthy of giving Pakatan a run for their money.
You know what's interesting, if you look in history about former authoritarian or dictatorial parties that actually return having been thrown out by, say, a democratic movement. You think of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union or, you know, many of the Communist parties actually, some of them did manage to rebrand themselves and stake a claim on, you know, on the public, on public life and political life in those countries, despite having that really terrible history.
Interesting. So did the leaders of those parties stay on, or did they see a fresh injection of new leaders?
Well, it depends on which country you're looking at. But some of them were led by, you know, by leaders who kind of ushered them into a new era. But you see, you need renewal. This is one of the things the one thing that I think we all be looking at is Zahid Hamidi and Hishamuddin Hussein, the cousin of Najib Razak, who lead UMNO now. Can they, and are they the credible vehicles to lead a reform or rejuvenation within that party?
Or is it going to come from the youth wing, right? We have had plenty of press conferences, or not plenty, but a couple of press conferences conducted by YB Kari Jamaluddin.
Or maybe new blood, because you know you might need new people, new faces that who weren't there when all these things happened.
Right. Also, you'd have to watch the space with all these individuals about whether they get investigated for corruption, because it seems the corruption, the possibility that any of these people will be in fact charged at some point in time for corrupt practices or you know abuse of power are very high, just because you know that was the ecosystem of Barisan Nasional. So we look forward to looking at that space. Now, we're going to be back with a look at amending the Constitution. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Koh. And the morning run continues. It's the 17th of May and it's just 21 minutes, coming up 22 minutes past 6 in the morning. Remember, we'll take you all the way up to 10 this morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis. That was Depeche Mode with Just Can't Get Enough. And in fact, if you think about the recently concluded elections, GE14 last Wednesday, it wasn't simply about electing a new government. It's, in fact, this new government, it has the mandate to overhaul the entire system that's become rotten from 6 decades of Barisan National rule right. / alliance.
Right. So reform has been a word that's been bandied about a lot, more so after Pakatan has won the 14th general election. And, you know, it involves so many branches of the government, so many facets of Malaysian life, everything from the judiciary, the AG chambers, you know, government, how it's run, the civil service,
media?
Education, media. Yeah, you know, like the list, this list of wants is just appears to be growing by the day, it seems.
And, you know, and a good thing too, right? Time for the country to reset, take stock, make sure it gets on the right footing. The people who are heading it are a curious mix. We have Tun Dr. Mahathir, because a long time prime minister, not two and a half decades, but 22 years. Mm-hmm. So 2 decades and 2 years. And then next to him are people who he might have been responsible for incarcerating. So we have at least two ministers who had been detained under the Internal Security Act, which is extraordinary. Turn of events.
Yeah, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim was released yesterday, and then there was an interview on Awani, and they asked him, you know, when was the point where, you know, things got better, and you know, he said, yeah, they met up, Tunam came to see him, and you know, you just know, and you know, things got better. You can see that they just want things for Malaysia to move forward.
Right. Yeah. And I think what was really poignant about Dato' Sri Anwar's interview with Astro Awani yesterday was that, you know, he made this message clear whereby it's not personal. Anything untoward that was done towards him, you know, he said, Saya senang je, right? You know, that's what he said. And it's about looking at the broader picture about how we can actually go about executing these reforms that are sorely needed here in Malaysia.
And of course, that's, you know, I think his attitude, and he expressed this last night at the rally in Petaling Jaya, isn't so about saying, well, all is forgiven and we can move on. I mean, I think he says the rule of law demands that, in fact, all these egregious crimes against the state and the public person, breaches of public trust need to be investigated. Mm. But they'll be investigated in a way that's different from how the Barisan Nasional allegedly used those institutions. They abused those institutions, so on and so forth. Now, one of the things that have been announced is the Institutional Reform Committee. On it, I think as part of a 5-member team, is retired Court of Appeal Judge Dato' K.C. Vora. Here is him talking about the IRC.
Okay, so.
Also, we seem to have lost that clip. Oh, we do? It's coming back on.
At the moment, we have the Attorney General's Chambers. And public prosecutor. We also need to look into the judiciary, the Judicial Appointments Commission, enforcement agencies, which include the police force. Then we have the Anti-Corruption Agency, and the EC, yeah, Election Commission, yeah.
That was retired Court of Appeal Judge Dato' K.C. Vohra. Mm. An extraordinary man. I don't know if you ever had a chance to encounter him. I did because I was I had been arrested. And I've been arrested
For
in my the old, good old days as an NGO activist. And there was a hearing on extension of remand, and he was the presiding judge, and with the public prosecutor who made some argument. He says, I'll give you 99 for effort, one for effect, which is classic. It was classic. The whole court roared with laughter because it didn't seem like, okay, he was not finding favor with the judge at that point in time.
And it looks like, you know, now if you have spent any time in a slammer, you can wear that as a badge of honor now.
That's right.
Yeah, well, it depends on what you did to get yourself into
it. What did you do, Shirai?
I was part of a group of people, including Professor Jomo Sundaram.
The Council of Eminent,
Persons. Yeah. We were all arrested together when we raised the issue of the occupation of East Timor. Then in 1996, it was not an independent country yet. And we were calling for a global discussion on the state of that territory.
Well,
that
was Rakuten, you're already rubbing shoulders with, you know, high-level people.
In a lockup. Anyway, we'll be back after the bulletin. The bulletin soon with Sabrina Magdalene. She's poised at the mic, but taking us to her are the angels. Take a long line. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Point nine. That was Moody Blues with Your Wildest Dreams. I'm Shirai Kutin, with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. The morning run continues. It's the 17th of May and it's just 40 minutes past 6 in the morning. We were talking about politics because, you know, G14, its aftermath, is not going to be leaving our lips anytime soon. One of the big, I think, moments in the last week was the rumours of a holiday that the former Prime Minister, Najib Razak, and his wife, Rosma Manso, were going to take. They were going to go to Indonesia just 2 days. A quick nip, excursion, shooting the breeze, whatever it was. It led to some panic. People actually turned up in droves at Subang Airport. I don't know if it's to catch a glimpse of them or to stop them from leaving. I don't know what it is. But eventually, what we did find out was the Immigration Department did put those two individuals on a blacklist. Now, the blacklist has become a subject of some controversy.
That's right. So you've got a commentary either for or against it. So, for example, you've got Su Hakam who says that, you know, we should stop barring people from leaving the country. Su Hakam Chief Razali Ismail says that proper reasons must be provided by the Immigration Department before anyone is placed on the blacklist. So that's on one side. On the other side, you've got commentary from, for example, the Lawyers for Liberty.
Yeah, so the lawyers group today defended the travel. I mean, not today, but they had defended travel ban, saying that, you know, Immigration Department has the right to prevent individuals under investigation or with pending criminal charges from leaving the country. So that is their case for that.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, will be Su Hakam's remit, which is to remind, all to keep to due process. And I think that's the general principle. But there are also extraordinary circumstances for which these principles need to be measured against, right? And so one of them is this, it's not simply that we had an election. We've had a fundamental shift in power, something we haven't seen since 1969. And so everything is up for grabs in terms of investigating the state, investing those complicit in the abuse of power and the use of funds and so on and so forth. And so, you know, if there's a flight risk within individuals, it seems infinitely reasonable. This is, of course, not equivalent to what Barisan Nasional did for decades, which is to bar dissidents or those who took a contrary view on many issues from leaving the country. For instance, many political leaders from the federal opposition were barred from leaving.
Yeah, I remember in 2015, I think some of them was like Tony Parr, Rafizi, even Ambiga, if I'm not mistaken. But I think she was only restricted from traveling to East Malaysia.
Right.
There was a time, yeah.
And then also speaking about reforms, right? You know, whether or not this process would warrant a relook as well, right? Because, for example, you've got comments from the Lawyers for Liberty who say that the Immigration Department has the right to prevent individuals who are either under investigation or with pending criminal charges from leaving the country. Now, I guess, you know, Swakam's view would be like this net perhaps is at risk of being cast too far, too wide, too fast, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, should there be a tweaking of this process as well? I mean, suspicion is one thing, but are these, you know, sound suspicions?
But if they have kind of enough evidence in a way,
reasonable suspicion, I think.
Yeah, reasonable suspicion.
I think the other thing is that, and this comes from, I think, people who are defenders of Barisan Nasional and the former dispensation. I mean, they are using these arguments to, in some ways, taint the current administration. They're trying to say, well, you're no different from those in the past. And what they do is, it's a series of false equivalents, right? So you try to say that this is equivalent to what happened in the past. This is the same as, and in fact, what we know from decades of Barisan Nasional rule was that there was massive abuse of power and political prerogatives in during that period. And so they're now trying to say, well, you see, Pakatan Harapan is doing just the same. And it is a typical argument made by those who want to defend Barisan Nasional.
Well, if I remember correctly, if you can check, I mean, the news reports have come out in 2015, Rafizi and Tony Pua, they were among the opposition figures then who were accused of fabricating documents relating to 1MDB, in which they were accused of they're doing it to have a smear campaign against the then Prime Minister Najib Abdul Razak. But, you know, and a lot of the documents or information that have come out since then, 2015 up to today, whatever that have come out, the information seems to be, correct in a way, if looking at DOJ's investigations and all that.
Right. You could always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio, WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back with a look at this morning's paper. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Lowell Fulson and Mello together. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And the morning run continues. We're taking all of you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning. All of you. Just absolutely everybody.
Yeah, certainly not Mello, though. Mello Together, was that the title of the song?
Yeah, Mello Together, yeah. But it's now time to look at the front pages of the morning papers as well as some of the headlines in our portals. I'm no prizes for guessing that the release of Anwar Ibrahim yesterday dominates the front pages. No guess, no prizes. Well, Joyce, what do you have?
I have New Straits Times with me, and the front page we have Freedom, that's the headline. So Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim granted a royal pardon by the king. And we also have a side story, GST zero rated effective June 1st. Also, police enters Najib's homes, and on the sidebar they have Tun M, which quote says, "More wrongdoings than you and I and the public actually know." That's about 1MDB.
Yeah. In my hands, I have Sina Harian and also Malay Mail. Well, like your papers, you've got the picture of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim gracing the front covers. Now, Sina Harian chose to go with that personal angle, or rather the lack of a personal angle, because this is something that we referenced earlier on in the show. So the headline on Sina Harian reads, "Saya Tak Dendam." Very strong words, you know, given the trials and tribulations that he has undergone over the last two decades or so. Yet for him to come out on the other side and actually say that this is water under the bridge, this is not personal, the self becomes subservient to the national agenda right now, the reform agenda. I think that's, you know, speaks volumes of the man. Over in the Malay Mail, it's got a sidebar here, just detailing some of the tremendous changes that we have already seen just 1 week into the new Pakatan government at the federal level. So speed up in government shakeup, and it lists several items there, be it on 1MDB or, you know, the size of the civil service, you know, etc. That needs to be trimmed. Yeah, a whole bunch of a wish list of sorts here.
You know, the other thing is that because of the lack of transparency, governance has become and government has become somewhat murky business. And one of the things that is with this light being shone on the way things are run is the fact that, and this is astounding, there are 17,000 political appointees in the system. We don't know what it amounts to in terms of a payroll, but the number, just the absolute number of people who are considered political appointees, and the issue is now whether they're going to be axed. And that's, I think, going to be a really interesting story, because this is the ecosystem of patronage that Barisan Nasional created over decades, a patronage system that kept them, kept their supporters close to them through, using public funds and putting them on the payroll.
Yeah, remember when the news came out yesterday, 17,000, and you can see on social media, everyone's saying that's a lot. And looking at that, there are contracts, and I guess we'll have to wait and see, because the figure or the amount of these contracts are not announced yet. So we'll have to wait and see what comes out from that. Also, in the news, PM to name 10-member cabinet this week. So we'll be following that news as well.
Yeah, now going back to that 17,000 figure there. Now, while it's certainly attention-grabbing, to say the least, but if, looking at some of the reports, it appears to be a rather wide definition there, that phrase political appointees, because it apparently also includes people like who are serving as drivers as well. Now,
there might be drivers to the political appointees.
Oh, right, yeah. So, are they political appointees? Right.
Well, they're part of an ecosystem. So right. Money's given to, say, X, because of his services to the party or to a particular leader. And then his coterie of people. So his little micro ecosystem of supporters, including...
Entourage.
Yeah, and so this is it, right? We didn't know. The thing is, all of this was on the public purse. I mean, taxpayer money was going to support this ecosystem.
Yeah, but that's why it'll be interesting to watch and see how much the total amount bill is, wastage there was.
Okay. Yeah. Also, I think notable is that Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong is scheduled to come up to Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
On Saturday, he's going to be meeting with Tun Dr. Mahathir, and he says that he will be the second regional leader to visit in less than 2 weeks.
Also in the news, Dr. M says the fuel prices will remain the same. So the fuel retail prices will not change, and if required, they will subsidize to keep the fuel prices at the current rate.
Right, which is, I believe, 2 ringgit and 20 cents per litre for RON 95. But, looking at, say, oil prices right now, Brent futures now $79.28. It is very close to that $80 mark. Far cry from what we saw, a couple of years ago, those $30, $40 levels, right? And would this then put a strain on the fiscal purses? Now, granted, there's a lot of intent to make sure that the civil service and government spending is a lot more efficient. Whether or not it's enough to offset these other measures, for example, subsidizing, at least targeted subsidies of petrol prices.
Yeah, we'll have to see the full picture to make an assessment of that. But one thing, it's also very interesting, because this process, and one of them was the issue of who would become prime minister. And that, Anwar Ibrahim revealed yesterday at the rally, and I think he'd said this as well as the press at the press conference earlier in the day, was that the Agong first offered the position of Prime Minister to Dato' Sri Wan Azizah as the head of the largest party in the Assembly. And she declined. She said that there was an agreement, and the agreement was for Tun to become the Prime Minister. And because this maybe reveals some of there's been a lot of rumours, a lot of talk about actually what happened.
Behind the scenes, right? Yeah.
And it certainly warranted a lot of, I wouldn't say warranted, but it triggered some backlash. You recall in the lead up or in that perceived delay from when the Agong was going to receive Tun Dr. Mahathir at the palace, you saw along Jalan Duta, there was just crowds of people just lining up and waving the flags and bursting out in song. So I guess fair to say you are seeing Malaysian citizens and voters really stepping up to the plate this time around.
Yeah, but one thing great about that was it was peaceful. And like Han, you mentioned, they were singing songs and waving flags.
Songs and waving flags. That is what Barisan Nasional leaders were doing for Joe Loh. Remember the time when there was a lot of support for Joe Loh? Why are we blaming Joe Loh? And Joe Loh's a nice guy, and so on and so forth. You don't remember the defense of Joe Lowe by people, individuals in the Barisan National Government?
I remember the concert, the Psy concert in Penang, that's... everyone was. Some people said that was.
The accusations around equanimity. Do you remember the defense of him? Now, on the front page of Utusan Malaysia, you have Joe Lowe diarahkan pulangkan equanimity kepada Amerika Syarikat. So the ripple effect of this, the change in government in Malaysia, there internationally as well. We look to see what happens to Joe Lowe. Looks to see what happens with that DOJ report. Remember, we had. MO1, and is it MO1?
Yeah, MO1. Yeah.
So remember, will MO1 be named?
Yeah. I think with regards to Joe Lowe, Dr. M said that, in quotes, we roughly know where he is. This was a couple of days ago. He told press that.
Right, and in keeping with that 1MDB theme, going back to the Malay Mail, the sidebar on the front page, so they list several things on this the government shake-up agenda as described by the Malay Mail. So, for example, one, misdeeds at the sovereign fund larger than publicly known. That's a comment coming out of the Prime Minister. Second, Malaysia to contact countries where 1MDB funds believed to be held in bid to recover billions that the previous government refused to acknowledge as belonging to the state investment firm and related entities. Now, we have seen the Swiss AG and also Singapore once again reiterating their willingness to work with Malaysia to get to the bottom of this. And then last but not least, you got investigations into 1MDB chairman Tan Sri Irwan Seriga Abdullah's role in the scandal will be done according to procedure.
Demoted or shifted. And he's also met with the Council of Eminent Persons. I think it's notable that several of the Pakatan Harapan state governments did not meet with the principle of gender parity, a lot of them failing miserably. I think Penang had just one woman on the exco, and so on and so forth.
Joy,
so
it's time for you to step up, girl.
Yeah, maybe put my name in the hat.
No, not so much that. You could go out on the streets and protest, because today
sing songs and wave flags.
It'd be your right. Today, the government of Putrajaya will respect your right to protest. Right, that hasn't happened for decades. Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. Sabrina Magnin will bring us the news. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me Tan Cheng Han and Joyce Goh. It's the 17th of May and it's just coming up to 7 minutes past seven in the morning. Time to continue our discussion of the news and the implications of the news we have, because had such an amazing news flow, such dramatic stories over the last week. Yesterday topped it with the release of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. He was granted a full pardon by Yang di-Pertuan Agong. And this occurs in some ways the culmination of a 20-year battle to clear his name. At a press conference yesterday, he was asked for his first reactions to his release.
Dan saya sampaikan terima kasih kepada tuanku kerana mengambil keputusan segera dan tegas membebaskan sepenuhnya tanpa sebarang syarat. Dan kita bersama tuanku selama hampir satu jam dan berbincang. Dan saya tentulah terasa terkesan kerana apa tagline-nya, dari penjara ke istana, from the prison to the palace.
Now, Dato' Sri Anwar also emphasized the circumstances in which his pardon was given. Now, he made it quite clear that it wasn't just a pardon, but also a complete cancellation of his conviction.
Dan saya sampai. I would like to clarify on the point of the pardon. Pardon normally is given to those who have somewhat accepted the judgment of the court and then appeal to the King for pardon. In my case, we appeal because there was a miscarriage of justice. We appeal because there was travesty of justice. We appeal because there was clear conspiracy to condemn me assassinate my political character. And I praise to Allah because the king accepted this, that the pardon is complete, unconditional, and due to our appeal, in particular Aziza, that there was miscarriage of justice on Anwar. Therefore, in the comment or statement by the prison director just now, I don't need to sign any document because the entire conviction is erased automatically.
Dato' Sri Anwar also shared his thoughts on Tun Mahathir as Prime Minister and his own immediate plans now that he's free.
My position is to give him all the support necessary to allow him to ensure that the agenda for reform, the changes that need to be done, be effectively carried out. And I don't think I would be seen to be either hasty to demand or to insist on any immediate time frame. I've told him that I've got invitations by renowned universities throughout the world to give series of lectures. I'm not going to stay there for a few years, don't worry. But naturally, I have a fellowship, weeks or month, from renowned universities, Harvard and Georgetown University and Stanford and some other parts of the Muslim world. Because I think I have a small contribution to make to show that the voice of reason and moderation in Islam is paramount. Number two, that Muslims can also be counted upon to ensure that there's freedom and justice for all citizens in their country.
He was also asked if he had truly forgiven Tun Dr. Mahathir.
I am Mahathir, bury the hatchet. I mean, it's a long time already. But why do we then have this? Many people question, why do you work with that man? And they became very cynical. Are you sure? Are you sincere? And my interest now is the wealth of the nation. I have forgiven him, and he has proven his mental. He has made sacrifices. He was maligned in the media. I tell you, it is like deja vu. But he struggled and worked indefatigably hard together. He has now supported the reform agenda. He has facilitated even my release. Why should I harbor any malice towards him? But as long as I continue to have direct contact and with Tun Mahathir, I believe that we will ensure the smooth transition, if it all happens in the near or future, would be something which is to be proud of by Malaysians.
That was the newly released Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim at a press conference yesterday at about 1:50 p.m.
Right, and I believe after that he also did several media interviews, I believe from his home as well. So talk about from prison to the palace and then onto this world tour. He's certainly out there waving the flag of freedom, so to speak, and
yeah,
you know, being that voice of reason, especially within the Islamic identity framework.
Yeah, I think one of the things he did say at the rally, as it was a big rally, about 11 o'clock when he turned up in Petaling Jaya, is that he made the point, and he said that this was in a conversation he had with the Turkish prime minister, who was saying there's been such bad or negative headlines coming out of the Muslim world. This has been one of those very positive ones, that democracy prevailing in Malaysia. Curious because Erdogan, President Erdogan of Turkey is not known to be a Democrat. He's imprisoned many academics and journalists. And so his record, at least when it comes to democracy, is dismal.
Yeah, and the messaging that we're getting from Dato' Sri Anwar, coming from his release, is he's saying that, his interest is the wealth of the nation. Basically, he's moving forward. So he wants to build Malaysia, waving the Malaysia flag. And that's great. And you can see just the past week since we've G14, post-G14, the new Pakatan Harapan government has been just boom, boom, boom. You know, it's been non-stop work for Tun M and everyone. And now you can see Dato' Sri Anwar, he just got released yesterday. And as Han said, already press conferences, you know, he's going to the Padang to give speeches.
I think the other thing that was very important was signalling the stability of the administration at this point in time, right? Signalling that he was not going to be muscling his way into the position of Prime Minister, that he was going to give Tun Dr. Mahathir space to do what they had agreed upon. He also, at the rally last night, said that the cabinet is made up of Dato' Sri Wan Aziza from PKR, also Lim Guan Eng, also Mat Sabu from Amanah, and also all these individuals create a united front in terms of that reform agenda. He doesn't have to be there himself in cabinet.
Right, and it appears to be a representative of the makeup of the Pakatan Harapan coalition. But I guess then the question is, you know, looking further down the line, you know, when he does eventually assume the role as Prime Minister, right, whether that transition will be done smoothly as well, because it appears that he will be inheriting a cabinet that was put into place not by him, but by Tun Dr. Mahathir. But of course, that's a question for, 2020 at the earliest?
Yeah, and also that, you know, you can always change your cabinet. I mean, you know, there's no, you're not stuck with the cabinet that you've inherited. Whatever it is, as you said, Han, it is some time down the road. Well, at this point in time, the message seemed very clear. Mm. Unity and consolidation of the reform agenda. Yes. I think that's very clear.
Yeah, and also the self being subservient to the national.
To Malaysia, the nation.
So who gets the last word now? I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
Okay, we're going to come back with Ho Kay Tan, Group CEO and publisher, The Edge Communications. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.